Welcome to Star Party, an astrology and tarot podcast that serves up both soulful evolution and bedazzled celebration. I'm astrologer and hypnotist Sandy Citron.
And I'm astrologer and tarot reader Bess Matassa. We're so glad you're here. Let's get the party started.
Hey, Star Party listeners, this is Sandy, and I'm super excited to wish you a very happy new year. And I'm here with Bess.
Woo! Happy New Year. Yeah, if you're listening to this at the time it's rolling out, you've made it. You've made it round the sun another time. And here we are on the crest of the unknown, the unknown knowns and the known unknowns, as it always is. Yeah.
And we're going to take the opportunity to talk about the cheerful topic of resilience.
Everybody's favorite. Yeah. So we've been taking each month to really invite in an archetypal exploration of a certain emotional theme that's connected, you know, loosely or not so loosely to the season. So resilience and Capricorn energy felt right. Yeah, I have some weird thoughts, Sandy. Or maybe they're
not
weird.
I'm excited to hear them. I need an injection of weird thoughts right now. So tell me.
Yeah. Aquarius season has come early this year. So in preparation for this topic, well, not in preparation for this topic, but it just happened that in the days leading up to our conversation, two things sort of came to me, and I'm still kind of working these out. We'll see how it goes. But I was surprised by them. The first one, I was watching this documentary, Fantastic Fungi, on Netflix, all about mushrooms and the mushroom networks. And I mean, if you haven't checked this out and you're at all interested in this topic, definitely I would highly recommend this documentary. You know, and they were talking all about mushrooms being like nature's computer, basically, and transmitting messages between trees and, you know, just all of the ways in which fungi represent or actively sort of partake in this interconnectedness of being. And so I was watching these fungi and I was feeling into resilience, and like there's all this like, you know, sped up photography where they're like taking over, you know, like you see all the fungi spreading out over the forest floor and going up the sides of trees and, you know, inside bodies and cultures of things and everything. And when I was first feeling into resilience, I was thinking of it as kind of like a hard ass topic. Like I was thinking of it as like survival, endurance, like a very rugged kind of energy. And, you know, I always used to joke that the three signs in the zodiac that I felt would, for very different reasons, like sort of survive the apocalypse would be Aries, Capricorn, and Scorpio. And, you know, I was kind of like in that zone of like Mars, Pluto, Saturn, just like, like survival, like just, you know, kind of getting like hit by the elements and struggling up the side of the mountain or whatever it was. And then I was watching these mushrooms and I was like, whoa, I think there's something else in this topic that I'm not really accounting for, as I'm giving, you know, giving all this sort of pride of place to this Pluto, Mars, Saturn, like badassery trinity, or what we sort of think of over culturally as badassery, which, you know, that's arguable. But I started to feel into the idea of the completeness of resilience, like the completeness of self that it necessitates, and the omnivorousness, like the sense of like leaving nothing out, becoming more like life, spreading out. It's like, you know, and I'm not saying that there isn't situations where resilience is called for, where we have to like take a stand or stand up or oppose in some way. But even in that act, I feel like there's a certain quality of resilience that's about being at ease and kind of letting, I don't know, something in the energy body just sort of spread out, you know, and kind of get wide. And it's a certain quality of acceptance. It's a certain quality of adaptation. But I just kept hearing this phrase, like, leave nothing out, and this kind of omnivorousness that I was seeing in these fungi, which have been surviving and are like basically like the precursor to all of life. And it's not through this like taking a stand or fighting or like, you know, somehow evolving in this like aggressive way where they, you know, trump other factors in the environment. It's because they're actually listening. And because they're partnering with and they're connecting. you know, and then I had this kind of like trippy experience, not trippy, like I was eating mushrooms, but trippy experience of being on the beach the other day. And like, you know, I've been kind of going through a time lately and, you know, I've been tapping into this topic and I was sort of approaching the water, walking down to the water alone. And I had that kind of like spread out feeling or that interconnected feeling of like, to remain, like resilience is about like remaining in the grain of life to a certain degree. And, you know, and then I started thinking, and this is all I'll say, and then I'll stop my like mushroom trip. But I started thinking, you know, it's interesting because I have a good friend and an amazing, you know, thinker and healer and teacher named Sue Hunt. And she has said to me before in the past, you know, mushrooms are Aquarius. To her, the understanding of mushrooms, energy, and mycelium are really connected to the sign of Aquarius. And so then I started really thinking about the partnership between Capricorn and Aquarius and the partnership between the ancient, you know, dual rulership of Saturn and what that means and what that means for, you know, perhaps a more complicated understanding of resilience. And I'll just stop there before I get too trippy.
It's funny because what you were talking about made me think about the connection between Sagittarius and Pisces, both ruled by Jupiter.
Ooh. Yeah.
So just, you know, a little foreshadowing for later, maybe.
Love a snack foreshadowing.
Yeah. The snack foreshadowing. An amuse-bouche.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because when I was writing a lot this last year, I was writing some books, which I'll tell you more about soon. But I kept using the word resilience, and in my mind, it meant like exactly what you're talking about. This kind of like more the Mars, Saturn, you know, Pluto side of things. It's like strength, you know, resilience. In my mind, resilience by definition was like just, you know, fortitude, grit, determination, this kind of thing. And then I looked up the definition and I realized it's also about adapting. And that kind of blew my mind for a second because I don't know why I didn't have that included in my understanding of the word. I, you know, words are funny. You learn them when you're so young and then you use them. And it's like, how often do you look up the definition or really think about it? So I realized, oh, right. Okay. So this is about the strength that comes from adapting. The strength that comes from kind of adjusting, or as you said, listening, you know, listening to your environment and then kind of encompassing a response. I was also reading a little bit this morning about resilience and a lot of things came to mind, like kind of half thoughts. But like one thing I noticed in a lot of the quotes I was reading is how much resilience comes up in like success quotes, you know? So it's like this big in our culture, apparently there's like a big connection between like talking about success and talking about resilience, which I'm cool with and that makes sense, but it's just not like at this moment, very second in my life, I'm not that interested. Like,
yeah, me neither. Like,
I'm just like, what is success? I don't know. Maybe I need to, you know, do some more self-inquiry about that. But I just don't care.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
And at this moment,
to me, it's like on some level, like success at this point, oh, I don't know. I haven't really worked this out, but like it's participation. It's like just the aliveness of participation. I think that's what like struck me as, you know, we think about this model of like success versus adaptation, or I forget the other word that you use, the kind of harder word. And it's like to get on top of something versus to get with something, you know, and to get on top of something we're seeing at every level of life, it's just fucking bankrupt. Like it's not the model like going forward. It's never been the model, first of all, but at this turning point, it's definitely not the model. Like we're all coming to the consciousness now that like we can't, like getting on top is not the way to go here. You know, it's getting with. So
Age of Aquarius. We've got to become the mushroom and group together and listen to each other, work together.
Yeah. You know, Saturn and Aquarius. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. The other interesting thing I read was that resilience, we think of it as being really unique or like this thing, or, you know, sometimes we think of it as being unique. Like, you know, I think as someone who's going to become a parent, like there's nothing I'd love more than to like teach my child resilience. And I think to myself, oh, well, how would I even do that? You know, like how, you know, am I going to take her on camping trips or something? And like, you know, like what is, how do you get taught that as like a skill? And I'm sure I'll learn many wonderful ways and that'll be a fun thing to explore. But this thing I was reading was like, actually, it's like really normal. Like resilience is way more normal of a thing than we think, because like we've all had challenges, we've all had struggles, and like we have to adapt and have that, you know, both that grit and determination, that Capricorn side, and that adaptation and innovation, that Aquarius side, you know, to really be able to shift and then bounce back. The definition, one of the definitions of resilience: an ability to recover from or adjust easily to misfortune or change. So like things are always changing, you know, and we're always like having to bounce back or shift. Another definition is the capability of a strained body to recover its size and shape after deformation caused especially by compressive stress. I liked that one.
That one really appeals to me, to retain or to, what did it say, to retain its shape or to
recover its size its shape. And shape.
Yeah, and that's really what I was thinking about with this like completeness, because there has to be sort of an acceptance on some level. We have to let in, if we're thinking about resilience as like facing, you know, different flavors of experience, some of which might be feel like total anathema to us in the moment. Like there still has to be a certain softening around a certain letting in of that, and like a certain kind of widening of the self. It's like that kind of omnivorous quality, you know, that I was looking at with these mushrooms. But I like what you're saying about this, like this two-pronged sort of Capricorn Aquarius, you know, the Capricorn grit and the Aquarius sort of adaptation. And I think also like we sometimes forget, you know, because Capricorn sort of gets co-opted by capitalism, whatever you want to say, but like Capricorn's an earth sign still,
yeah,
you know? And so earth is still absorptive. It's still, you know, it still sort of receives on some level. And so, you know, there's many sort of tones. And I think when we fold back in this certain adaptive quality, we also see Capricorn as a certain shapeshifter, like a certain kind of like transmutation of matter, you know, that starts with Virgo and then goes into Capricorn. We see it with sort of the half fish, half goat. Like there is a certain adaptive resourced quality of like, okay, competently meeting the moment, and all also like a certain, I don't want to say conquering of our own natures, but a certain like high level of acceptance of our own natures and then of nature itself, the wildness of nature. This is the final earth sign.
Yeah, and it's initiative and cardinal energy, you know, really willing to look and say, okay, well, what's the next new thing? You know, where's the beginning? The next beginning.
Yeah.
Interesting. Hmm. So I think it's ready. It's time for a snack.
I think it's ready. Well, I have to say, when I was prepping my snack, I felt at the beginning like I was on like Supermarket Sweep, you know, that show. I think they revived it recently.
They where people like really into it.
Oh my God. Run through the grocery store and like grab all the giant turkeys and stuff. I was all over the place with this one. And I was really kind of concentrated in the beginning around the idea of modalities. And then I was a little hung up in the elements for a while. But, you know, I think I'll say this. I think there is something to sort of checking in with your, you know, as with all these topics, checking in with sort of your modality, your sort of dominant modality, you know, quality in this conversation, because cardinal energy, you know, and fixed energy and mutable energy have different styles of resilience, I think, you know, and cardinal sort of rising to meet the moment, initiating that kind of like sort of rising up to, you know, kind of bring the whole body to the situation. And then, you know, fixed energy sort of spreading out and absorbing down and in, and then, you know, mutable energy really in some ways the ultimate adapter as it sort of changes and shape shifts. But I got a little hung up, and then I'll get into my actual snack. I did get a little hung up on fixed energy in this conversation. And I think I have like a little bit of a fetish for fixed energy because I feel like it comes through for me for, you know, in a number of ways. I don't know. Anyway, I need to explore that. But when I was watching this mushroom documentary, I was thinking about, they were talking a lot about plants, you know, versus fungi, or plants in conversation with fungi. And I was just watching all this footage of like these blooming things, and it all just like looked like, obviously there's a quality of blooming that's cardinal, and certainly a quality that's adaptive, that's mutable, but the kind of like fecund, fertile earth, like really felt like fixed to me. And they were talking about how plants in many ways have like adapted to, you know, to sort of court, you know, the kingdom, like to be sexy, you know? And I was thinking about like plants kind of as the Leo and the Taurus of the fixed trinity, or the fixed quartet. And then fungi come in to break, you know, to kind of break things down and take them back in. And, you know, the Scorpio and Aquarius sort of came to mind. But I think there is something to play with, you know, in your chart, looking at where the four fixed signs are, either by planet, you know, or on house cusps, or even looking at the fixed houses in the chart, which would be 2, 5, 8, and 11, and looking sort of at the contents of those, or the house cusp of those. And, you know, really just sort of considering the fixed energies as this like all-encompassing quality. When we sort of rise to meet a moment, how we can, you know, perhaps remain in some sense, or, you know, feel kind of complete in the situation, like open ourselves to the completeness of whatever's arising, sort of spreading out in that way that the plants and sort of the mushrooms were doing in that documentary. But the place where I actually landed for the meat of the snack was aspects. And I'm not going to, this is going to be sort of a cursory treatment of aspects for the purposes of this conversation. But I was really thinking about, you know, what is the mechanism in the chart that sort of lets the whole party of participants like fully live, like come to life? And I think in moments where we face adversity, if we're thinking about resilience like that, or even just moments where we're like, how do I just keep coming to life? Like, there's a feeling that we don't want to leave anything out. Like, we want to have the different parts of ourselves in communication with one another sort of synced, or, you know, just not there, like nobody sort of, no planet or sign kind of left behind. And so I started to think about, okay, there's different flavors of resilience that we can look to different aspects for, you know. And I think a few episodes ago we talked about the in conjunct aspect as, you know, one of the aspects. But just as sort of a reminder, when I'm talking about aspects, I'm not talking about them in the mathematical way for the purposes of this conversation. I'm talking about them as communication between signs. So if you're new to astrology, when you're looking at your chart, you see all those lines running through the chart. These are just the different planets in the different signs talking to one another. So I'm just going to go through the aspects and just offer like a little bit of a touch point, or a, you know, a starting point for exploration, for kind of knowing your aspects and letting that kind of come alive in your chart. And so the first aspect being the conjunction, and for the purposes of this conversation, that's just two planets that are in the same sign. So if you have, you know, your sun and moon in the same sign, sun and Mars, whatever the thing is, when you're looking at your chart, if you have a double, you know, double of some of one of the signs represented. And for the purposes of resilience, I think that this is really a part, an aspect where we get that feeling of saturation, of like just being steeped in our nature. And so there can be a real feeling of, you know, sometimes the conjunction can be something that needs more examination, because it's kind of like, when I bring this planet forward, I automatically do, you know, if I have sun conjunct Mars, every time I'm doing my sun, quote unquote, like expressing my, you know, individual self, my mission, Mars is like coming with me. So sometimes in a chart, you know, when that's happening, when there's a lot of conjunctions, we want to kind of like look at sort of disentangling some of that, or seeing if we can bring more consciousness to that. So it's not just like, oh shit, like every time I flex my sun, my, oh geez, Mars comes along and I don't really have consciousness around that. But I think for the purposes of resilience, there's a real like, just a concentrated kind of like, ooh, just being like steeped in that energy. And so if that's sort of a flavor, you know, you can play this a couple different ways. You can look for these different aspects in your chart. And if you're a little bit more intermediary. You can think about like, okay, if I have a conjunction between, you know, my moon and Mars? Like, what would that mean that I have that sort of power point in my chart when I'm, you know, meeting adversity or, you know, connecting to this concept of resilience? And then you can also sort of like look more broadly at your chart and say, like, you know, what are the most common aspects in my chart? You know, do I have a lot of conjunctions? Do I have a lot of oppositions? You know, and then sort of getting a feeling, you know, a feeling of, you know, maybe your most dominant sort of mode of meeting resilience or meeting this topic. So the second aspect, and I'm not doing the minor aspects in this conversation, so we're just going to talk about the main six. The second aspect being the opposition. These are just the pairs of signs that are opposite one another, you know, on the wheel of the year. So, you know, Aries and Libra, and then going on through the wheel of the year that way. And for me, in conjunction with resilience, oppositions are really about ownership, you know, in sort of rising to meet a moment or enduring in some way, remaining. They're about calling to consciousness the other point of the polarity and not projecting that onto relationship, which sometimes oppositions end up, you know, either we sort of find them in the environment and we meet them through situation, or, you know, we meet them through another person, or we kind of swing, you know, between those extremes on the two points of the opposition. And I think for the purposes of resilience, looking at our oppositions as ways to sort of like reclaim or re-territorialize that part of ourselves and just realize that even if it's meeting us in the environment, so for example, if we have, you know, whatever moon opposite Pluto, and, you know, we feel like we're always meeting Pluto or meeting the moon, you know, outside, you know, in another person, in another situation, that we're able to sort of like look at that as, you know, a part of ourselves, kind of reabsorb that. And then the third aspect, the square, for the purposes of today, this is two planets that are in a sign that's the same modality. So they're, you know, both fixed or both mutable, what have you, but they're in quote unquote incompatible elements. And I don't like this term. There's got to be another, I got to figure out another term for this, but it's like what we think of as like, you know, earth and fire and air and water. So anyway, if there's a lot of squares in the chart or you're looking to sort of lean on your squares, this is where I think we find more of that traditional feeling of resilience as like grit, you know, as like competence, as like developing a skill set around how both of those planets, you know, the signs of those planets work together and drawing upon those to sort of like, okay, meet a challenge within ourselves, meet two aspects of ourselves that are calling for us to become competent in communicating between them. And then the next aspect, the trine, this is sort of like, this is, you know, planets and signs that are incompatible, are in the same element, excuse me. So like fire, you know, two planets in fire, two planets in earth, what have you. And the trine is almost, to me, it's like if you think about even the symbol of the trine, that little like triangle, it's like a little seat. It almost reminds me of like one of those little camping chairs or chairs that you, you know, if you go to like a talk or something where you're sitting on the floor, you know, those like little chairs that you prop up and then you sort of lean back into, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, it's like a feeling of like leaning back into a seat. There's a natural sort of support system, a natural kind of inheritance, like a little inherited jewel that's just sort of yours, you know, in your little box. And so I think in moments around the topic of resilience, being able to sort of lean back and into that spot in the chart, you know, lean back into those planets, those signs. You know, when I say these planets, these signs, if you're a little bit more intermediate, you can start to sort of interpret these aspects through the planets they're placed in. And if you're just starting out, you can just say, oh, like, let's just call upon those basic planetary energies. I don't really know what, you know, Pluto in Scorpio means and my moon in Cancer means, but I know that I have them both in water signs. You know, what would it mean to sort of meet a moment in responsiveness to that, like by calling on like, you know, a collaboration between those two energies. And then the second to the last aspect is the sextile. And this is a meeting of planets in signs that are quote unquote compatible. Fire and air and earth and water. And this is where we have this like little snowflake. There's a little symbol for this that's kind of like a little snowflake sparkle. And this is like our magic. This is like, our little powers that maybe we haven't fully tapped, but we sort of have to go to our little box and be like, ooh, I'm going to stir up a little concoction over here with my sextile and like let it sparkle. And so these are aspects to draw on, you know, vis-a-vis the topic of resilience, where we need maybe an innovative mode of meeting that, or, you know, we're opening to kind of meet the moment in a different way. And then lastly, the in conjunct, and we talked a lot about this on one of the previous episodes, now I'm forgetting which one, the in conjunct or the quincunx, these are signs that are in both differing modalities and quote unquote incompatible elements. And you just find them on either side of an opposition. So if, if Aries is opposite Libra, the two in conjunct signs to Aries are on either side of Libra in the wheel of the year, Virgo and Scorpio. And, you know, the in conjunct for me is really about acceptance. It's about two energies that might not seem on the surface to be collaborative, but call for some sort of radical understanding of one another. And, you know, I can't remember now which, what were you talking about when we were talking about the in conjuncts? Was it,
Meaning? Is that what you're referring to?
I think it was maybe in Scorpio. Oh, I think maybe it was transformation.
Oh, transformation.
Yeah, and having these as like your little friends, your little pals that are going to like walk through the fire.
Yeah.
Because on the surface, you might not know that you need them, or you might not even be able to conceptualize what they're bringing. But sort of inviting your in conjuncts in to be like, whoa, this other sign, maybe I didn't even know that I related to this energy, but whoa, what would it mean to have this as sort of an accompaniment through this situation that might be confronting in some way, or that's calling for my endurance, or calling for my, acceptance, you know, around the topic of resilience. So again, you can play with those if you're more advanced in kind of filtering through planets and signs and the whole shebang. If you're super advanced and you love numbers, you can go wild and out of sign aspects if you know what that means. I don't really fuck with those. Just it's not my style of reading. Mm-hmm. But if you do, that's beautiful. And then you can also just like take sort of a temperature check. Like, oh, does it look like I have tons of oppositions in my chart? Does it look like I have like a lot of squares? You know, there's usually like a dominant feeling tone of a couple of aspects that dominate the chart.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm going to have to look through mine. And I already had some ideas there of like, I have a lot of conjunctions and a lot of sextiles. So it's kind of like this dance back and forth of like getting kind of entrenched and subconsciously bringing too much to the party with the conjunction, and then like kind of easing off and saying, oh, okay, well, what could I change here? That'll sparkle too. I like that.
Yeah. I'm like pretty much all conjunctions and oppositions. So yeah, it's, there's usually a dominant, just like we have kind of a dominant element, dominant couple of elements. There's usually a dominant dominance and aspects.
Yeah. I was even thinking when you were talking, like just to, for fun, to add in the semi-sextile, for signs that are right next to each other.
Oh, babies. Oh, I love
little
those guys.
Semi-sextile.
The semi-sextile to me are like the little cheerleaders of the zodiac. They're like the little helpers where, you know, and these are just signs that are sitting next to each other on the wheel of the year. You know, we think of them sometimes, you'll hear them referred to as like cusp signs, or when someone's like, oh, I'm on the cusp of, you know, which is a whole other conversation, but I almost see them as like little like lifters of the next one, because there is a natural process that sort of begets the signs that follow one another. So they sort of respond, you know, to the sign previous. And
And there's also like along with that, because that's very true. And at the same time, there's such a mad difference between the two signs that are next to each other too. You know, I heard, what's his name? I'll look it up in a second, but I was at an astrology lecture and I'll look up his name in a second. His first name's John, but he was saying that if you take the two signs, if you imagine a circle and then you take in that circle the two signs that are next to each other, and then in between them, you snip the circle, you cut the line of the circle. And then you flatten that line. It's like an opposition. It's like the two signs are then opposite each other. Does that make sense?
Oh, no. I just completely lost. I like failed geometry.
So like you have a hula hoop. You have a hula hoop. And the hula hoop represents the zodiac wheel.
Okay.
And you've got Aries and Pisces are right next to each other.
Okay. Okay.
And then right in between them, you cut the hula hoop. And you hold, you like bend that plastic out so that it's flat. And then they're totally as far apart from each other as they could be.
Wow.
Those
yeah.
two signs. And
that's
I liked that, even though it takes a minute to get to the metaphor of it. But I liked that because it's like, oh yeah, like, I mean, especially Pisces and Aries is such an obvious
yeah.
example because
yeah.
they're so different from each other. So in a way, you can almost use your in conjunct story for that as well. Like the acceptance
right,
of the
right.
two. Being, you know, and then add in that lifting that you're talking about, because I think they can yeah. really lead into each other as well.
Yeah, I love that because, you know, if we're thinking just purely, and not to get too geeky over here, or whatever, but just thinking just purely like the semi-sextile signs are also in the same quality of relationship as, wait, am I getting this right? As the as the in conjuncts, like they're differing
right.
elements
exactly.
and differing modalities. Right, right.
right.
Okay,
so,
I just am like,
no, exactly. So it's like when you're looking at, yeah, we don't have to bang this can
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah. Now I'm like my head's all entangled, but yeah, that is mm-hmm. super interesting.
Totally.
Wow. All right. I'm excited for your snack,
so,
Sandy.
Oh, my snack. I wanted to bring for both Saturn and Jupiter.
Woo!
Yeah, the double duo, the teachers.
I don't know why I get so excited about that, but I am very excited.
They're exciting because they're both our teachers and they have different styles, you know, on the most basic level. Saturn is that teacher who has like really high expectations for you, wants you to show up to class on time, wants you to like totally, you know, wants to challenge you, wants to like give you the really hard homework and then expects you to do it and turn it in on time. And if you don't turn it in on time, there's going to be some kind of repercussion. And then Jupiter's the kind of teacher who wants to inspire you, wants to help you find this like kind of internal connection to your values so that you can feel really confident in yourself and kind of learn through your own connection to, you know, excitement and optimism. And that, you know, I recognize that what I just said maybe paints Saturn in kind of a bad light, which I don't really like to do because I think that they both have their value, you know, you need both throughout at different moments and maybe even together. So, in terms of resilience, I like the Saturn-Jupiter dynamic because Saturn can show like those challenges that we face, you know, when we come upon something that limits us, when something changes and we have to bounce back and we're, you know, needing to connect with our inner strength and we're kind of getting pushed a little bit. And then Jupiter shows the part of resilience that's the adaptable kind of like bouncing back part, this part of us that reforms the shape. I always think of like a beach ball with Jupiter, like this super big, bouncy, light, animated kind of object that's just bouncing down the beach. Like, and it's like, yeah, so we have to find the optimism. We have to look, you know, at moments, and it's not going to happen all at once. You know, we've been doing such a great treatment moving through transformation to finding meaning. And now we're here at resilience. And it's like, we don't expect in the moment of transformation that we're going to like have that necessarily that optimistic kind of bounce and be like, yeah, everything's great. You know, there's a process to it. But I love this idea again that resilience is so normal because we've all had to do this, you know, and we're always finding some kind of challenge and connecting to some kind of regrouping. And so with these two planets, you can really see a great arc and that they talk to each other and they can work together, you know, and that you can look at your Saturn and you can look at your Jupiter and see what are my different resources here that I can bring to my own resilience process. So, you know, if you're having some kind of challenge in your life right now, whatever we all probably are, you know, whatever level that challenge is on, you know, just bring it to the front of your mind. And then look at your Saturn sign and look at your Jupiter sign and think, okay, what are the resources here of my Saturn sign? What are my lessons I've learned? Where have I had to really push myself? Where have I had to challenge myself? What have I been working on, you know? And also how might that Saturn sign kind of in a way represent part or something about this challenge I'm going through right now? Is there a connection or a through line? There might not be, but there might be, you know, and kind of really examining that maybe through some journaling. And then same thing with the Jupiter sign and looking and saying like, okay, so what are my values here? What could help me? What are my resources to get through this challenge to bounce back? You know, like what are the things about this sign that show my skill sets? You know, I have Jupiter in Virgo. Maybe I need to get really down to the details and, you know, kind of take care of my body or do something to organize myself or get myself out of my head in some way and into my physicality. So looking at these different signs could be really helpful. And I want to kind of suggest as well, based on what you're saying, to look at that connection between the Saturn sign and the Jupiter sign as well. Like, what's the aspect there? You know, are they in two signs right next to each other, like they are right now with Jupiter and Pisces and Saturn? Oh, wait, sorry, at the time of recording, I'll have to look at where they are January 1st. But at the time of recording, we've got Jupiter and Pisces and Saturn and Aquarius. So it's like they're right next to each other. And so as an example, you know, maybe some of the limitations or challenges of the Saturn are like, how do I work in groups or how do I connect to my ideals and what do I want to change and how am I thinking about myself? What's my mindset or what are my big concepts about my life? And then this Jupiter and Pisces resources could be like, maybe I need to connect into some of my intuition or to my more kind of all-knowing side. You said something earlier that I thought was so Pisces. You said spread out feeling when you were talking about the mushrooms. Like, maybe I need to connect to that spread out feeling, which to me, I'm not sure exactly what you mean, but when I hear that, I think of like me as a soul kind of spread out and connected to all things in the universe. You know, Is that what you mean with it?
The spread out is like I think it's a connection. And it's also like it's a kind of like sitting where it's like you're sitting energetically, like so wide that you're like, I don't know. It's like a absorptive state too. I was thinking about it initially in terms of connection with the fixed signs, but I think it's also like it has a very mutable, you know, Piscean or Sagittarian quality too of like diffusing through the environment. I got to ask a question because you know, and whatever, I think people listening to this podcast know I'm like not like a techie astrologer. That's just not, you know, I think it's beautiful for people to come to astrology from all, you know, different kind of modes of being. But I just had this thought, like, it seems to me like Jupiter and Saturn, just the way that the planets are moving, are almost always in semi-sextile together. I mean, I'm sure that's not always the case, but like they often track because, you know, one's moving every year-ish and the other's moving 2.5 years. Well, I guess not. But yeah. It's they don't get that far apart, right, from each other.
They can.
I guess they can.
I'm pretty sure they can because Jupiter's orbiting every 12 years and Saturn's orbiting every 28 and a half years. So
right. Oh, yeah, of course.
They can definitely skew out. Yeah.
I just had this mode, you know, because I was thinking about them both being in semi-sextile now. So I was like, oh.
Yeah. No, I actually had a similar thought because when we were born, they were in a similar kind of connection. Like
mine are conjunct. Yeah. In the same sign.
Mine are semi-sextile. So yeah, I was like thinking about that and then thinking about a lot of the clients I have and then thinking about right now. And I kind of came to the same thought and I was like, no. Okay.
Wait a minute. I love like what you're saying feels like, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt if you're
I'm a Libra. I want to bounce back and forth. Tell me what you're thinking.
Well, I'm just like, it's starting to fire for me because you brought up the semi-sextile, which was the aspect I had initially sort of left out of the conversation. Mm-hmm. And then it almost feels like the semi-sextile maybe is like one of the great keys to this conversation because, you know, you're talking about Jupiter and Saturn, which is naturally the relationship between Sagittarius and Capricorn, you know, which sit semi-sextile together. And then we've been talking a lot about Aquarius, the other sign on the other side of Capricorn.
Right.
And so it's like those two signs
Pisces,
that,
which is traditionally ruled by Jupiter as well.
Right. So folded in. Yeah. But it's like those two signs that sit on either side of the sign of Capricorn that we're sort of using as our gateway into this topic would be naturally in semi-sextile relationship to Capricorn.
Totally.
And so there's something, I don't know, there's something there. Like maybe if you just like don't do anything else with the aspects in this like little workshop, you just look at your semi-sextile, you know, you just look at, and even if you don't have it, like if you don't have any planets, like, I don't even know if I do, I got to think through my chart, but like, even if you don't have any planets and signs that are just, you know, sitting, you know, adjacent or on either side of, you know, another sign, you know, just thinking about like your sun or your moon and thinking about the two signs that sit on either side of that, or, you know, I don't know, you could go in any direction with this, but.
Totally. And taking that kind of, you know, into what I want to touch on in the hypnosis, even though we'll wait, we'll do the hypnosis at the end. But, you know, Sagittarius is, when I think of Sagittarius, I think of values. And one thing I was reading, I'll share the link in the show notes for this article on positivepsychology.com. And then they have a download, you can get a free PDF with some exercises. But in one of them, they're talking about how when you can connect with your values, that your personal values, it helps you deal with challenges in your life. So like being able to connect with your values, you know, if I value friendship, or if I value care, you know, or whatever your different values may be, and we'll go into that more in a bit, then it can help me like have a kind of touchstone or something, some meaning, you know, going back to our last episode, some meaning that then can help me bounce back after or during some kind of challenging situation. And that's where this resilience really comes from. And so, yeah, I was really thinking about this Sagittarius values and then this Capricorn limitation and then building up the structure and building up like the new initiation, a new kind of way through and based on your own sense of your own inner strength.
Whoa, man. I'm going to have to listen to this one. Yeah, I feel like with each growing episode, I'm like, I need this medicine, baby. I'm going to have to listen back to whatever Sandy's saying. So are we ready for a little tarot?
Yeah, let's do tarot.
So this one came to me and I was like, what? At first I was like, I don't know about this. But the thing that came through for me is the tens. And I don't think that we've talked about the tens yet. We've looked at a number of other numbers, you know, number quartets and the, and, you know, through the different suits of the tarot. But now I'm like, now it's kind of coming to light in a different way because the tens in the tarot, and I'm talking about, you know, the four tens, the Ten of Cups, Wands, Pentacles, and Swords, they have a natural affinity with the 10 in the major arcana. And you can do this for any of the numbered, you know, the minor arcana cards. You can sort of loop it back into what's sort of the, almost their parent card in the major arcana. And the parent card of the tens is the number 10 card, which is the Wheel of Fortune, which is ruled by Jupiter. And so now it's sort of giving me a different gateway, like what you're bringing forward about Saturn and Jupiter is like giving me a different understanding of, you know, perhaps like, you know, one of the whys of why this quartet of cards came through. But the tens are interesting because in many ways, I mean, they represent as the farthest that we go in a particular suit, you know, that the farthest that we travel, at least through the minors, through the sort of stages, the minors from ace to 10. And so there's a certain completeness to them. There's a certain saturation point. We've reached sort of the height of something. And then there's also this kind of funny, I think, interpretation. And it's not, you know, it's not a problem. This is sort of like how you roll. But I think sometimes we think of, we kind of tend to split the 10 of Cups and the 10 of Pentacles kind of get pigeonholed as like promises, like great promises, like ecstasy and bounty and like just this like full upness of like the Pentacles, the earth suit, or the Cups, the water suit, you know, emotional ecstasy, like receiving all these things, all this stuff. And then the 10 of Swords and the 10 of Wands, which are air and fire, sort of get positioned as like the, like, I can't even anymore. Like I've reached like the limit of something. And so it's interesting even to think about like what the limit, like earth and water, what it feels like when we're like saturated with those experiences versus like air and fire and like getting like full up with air and fire. I don't know. It's kind of a funny thing. But the reason I think that these four cards really came through for me was that there's a certain like entirety of experience that they represent. There's a certain letting the fullness of whatever sort of presenting in its own fullness, like be present, a kind of like epic quality to it. It almost feels like, I feel like there's like a trope in movies sometimes, or maybe it's in like stories where there's like a character who enters a new world or maybe re-enters the same world, but it's like, I think it's more for the purposes of this conversation, like entering the same world, like they've fallen asleep and then they wake up and the world is like, the contours of the world seem to be the same, but then they're like walking around and it's sort of like this trippy experience of everything kind of getting like, whoa, I didn't see that before, which kind of like loops this all back to the mushrooms, you know, documentary in some ways. but there's a certain, I think, availability to sort of, I don't know, to both like re-interconnect ourselves to like a certain entirety of experience in each of these four cards. And I'll just treat them, that may sound a little abstract, but I'll treat them individually just quickly. You know, firstly, the Ten of Cups, there's a real, like maybe more so than any other card in the deck, there's a real call for presence in this card. It's not the promise of something, or at least that's not how it comes through to me. It's more the, like, can you call yourself into like full emotional presence, full watery presence with whatever sort of emerging. And I think it can be a really useful card to tap for resilience in that sense of like, whoa, could I just sort of like steep myself so much in the emotional climate of what's happening? And that's not to say like don't have boundaries or don't, you know, take space for yourself or whatever, have perspective, but this card calls us into like a moving into, and for me, it's almost like, it's like a more emotional or a more kind of watery sense almost of the Strength card, where we like move into the grain of life. You know, we move into the thing that feels frightening or feels hard or whatever it is. And then secondly, the Ten of Pentacles, you know, a lot of times this card is like gets connected to, you know, some sort of sense of achievement in the material world or this promise of like something, you know, this beautiful whatever coming to you. And you know, obviously, you know, listeners know that I'm not like a, you know, predictive out there externalized kind of person when it comes to tarot. But I've been thinking and working more and more with the Ten of Pentacles as like the here-ness and the fullness of the material, sort of the materiality of the situation. And so there can be, I think, a way to call on this card in moments where we're looking for resilience, where it's like, can we like kind of relax the body into the situation a little bit, you know, where are sort of our bodily, our earthbound resources to like sense, like re-sense the world around us in this moment, you know, connect to elementally to different aspects of our environment, you know, not feel like we have to shut any part of that physicalized experience off, you know. And then the Ten of Wands, you know, we see this card and usually it's somebody, you know, falling down under the weight of like 10 wands. And it's like, it's this like, I can't even card, you know, like we just got to drop it. We got to drop it. But there's this sense, I think, for in connection with resilience, where this offers us a whole new way to deal with or to handle fire. You know, we might think of fire energy as like resilience of like, I've got to do something. I've got to action something. I've got to like rise up and make a change or take a stand or whatever. And there's certainly situations in which that kind of resilience is called for. But with respect to the Ten of Wands, there's almost this feeling of like the resilience is just your fundamental aliveness. Like you don't need to do anything with those wands. It's like, can you just like tap again, like the heat in your own spirit in this moment and like the I'm still here-ness of you. And I think that's something we talked about in the meaning conversation around the sign of Mars as well. And then lastly, the Ten of Swords. This is like, you know, often gets interpreted as like, we've reached just like a limit, you know, mentally where we like can't spin anymore in a cycle. You know, you'll see this card sometimes with like a body on the ground and a bunch of swords, like 10 swords, just like puncturing it. And it's like, it's a breakthrough moment though. It's a kind of moment of like, whoosh, like sometimes resilience calls for like radical reinterpretation. You know, it's not just about like sticking to the plan or sticking to the what I know my resources are, you know, whatever. It's sometimes it's like, whoa, it's like let yourself become an open door, an open window, an open field in the situation. And, you know, let life blow through you, not, you know, to in a destructive way or, you know, not standing up for yourself. But, you know, can you use this card to become more spacious, you know, in the situation and use that spaciousness as strength? So, you know, as per usual, you can pull these cards out of your deck or you can write their names on backs of little cards and you can draw one for yourself, or you can just use them as sweet little intention setters around this conversation.
I love that. And you can totally bring all of that into the hypnosis too, as you wish. Bring your cards, use them as a starting point if you want. Let's see here. So I just, as a side note, I found the name of the astrology lecture teacher that I went to who was talking about the semi-sextile. I promised I would find it. It's John Marchesella. Okay, that was that. I had to do it. So,
do it.
So I was thinking about the hypnosis and how, you know, it's, if you're listening to this when it comes out or around the beginning of the year, like, you know, it's this time, classic time to like come up with New Year's resolutions. And I don't have a problem with resolutions. Sometimes I use them and sometimes I try to do them and sometimes I don't, you know. I have had some favorite ones in the past that usually have nothing to do with like any kind of actual goals. But I think at this moment, in lieu of this conversation, what would be really fun to connect to is actually kind of connecting to your values and to have those values help you move through, you know, whatever's coming up for you right now. And those values can become like touchstones or kind of supports that can help you spark your own resilience throughout the year and help you adapt and find that inner strength and that, you know, determination and lift up and kind of rise up and spring back or whatever, however you want to say it. So I think it's a fun little beginning of the year exercise. And I think there was something I just thought, but I'll let it go. Oh, maybe it'll come back to me. So this little program that I just found for you, it's like basically we're going to go through some journaling prompts. And what's really cool about hypnosis is that when you're in a light hypnosis, you can talk and you can also write, you know, so you don't have to think of hypnosis as a super deep, you know, sleep that you're going into where these magical things happen. It's just a more relaxed state of mind. And so I do like to, when I'm journaling, sometimes just take a few deep breaths, kind of, you know, notice my exhale kind of extending a little bit longer than my inhale. Doing the things I know I can do to help my body relax, get in a comfortable seat, you know, place my feet firmly on the floor if I'm seated in a chair, which might be easiest for writing, you know, get your journal. And there's no right or wrong. If you need to stand up and stretch in the middle of it, fine. Like, you're not going to snap out of a relaxed state, you know, unless someone rings the doorbell really loud or something, you get interrupted. So get yourself set up, take a nice few deep breaths, get a journal, get a pen. I've adapted, basically lifted this recipe, these questions from the positivepsychology.com slash what is resilience. And I'll share that link so you can also go get these exercises for yourself and I'll adapt it a little bit. That's the source for this exercise. Okay. So get your journal, get your pen. If you want to get a couple of markers or colored pencils, that could be fun. You could just do this in your mind as well. You don't have to write anything down. Sometimes it's helpful. I'll kind of, you know, offer some prompts and then I'll say, you know, you can kind of keep your eyes half closed and just write down what comes to mind. And, so take a few deep breaths. Get settled in your chair and just imagine yourself surrounded by some healing, helpful, supportive presences, wonderful, warm support, loving beings, your higher self. Another deep breath, exhale. Really let the stomach muscles relax. Let your legs relax. Connect to your feet. Feel how steady your feet are, solid, connected to the ground beneath your feet. And when you're ready, just bring to mind whatever it is that you're working through right now. So that's front of mind. You don't have to spend a lot of time here with it. Just so you know what it is, whatever, you know, challenge or stretching that you're doing in your life right now. And with your eyes half closed, if you wish, you can jot down a few words or sentences that represent what that is for you. Take a moment to consider that. And then in your mind's eye, you can imagine yourself walking along the side of a river, picking up some stones that you see along the side of the river there. And each stone represents a worry or stress around that. You can just, as you're ready, drop those stones into the river. Maybe you throw them, just releasing your load, lightening your load. Letting your mind drift and wander to consider why it's worth it to you to keep going through this challenge. To imagine the beautiful, wonderful results of working through this challenge and the why, the benefits. And if you'd like, with your eyes half closed, you can write some of those words or feelings down. As you walk along the side of that river in your mind's eye, you see wonderful flowers. You can pick and create a bouquet, each flower representing the beautiful creations and benefits that you are at this very moment planting the seeds for in your life. And you can allow your mind's eye to turn to the values that are important to you. Maybe values of balance, boldness, compassion, community, contribution, creativity. Any of these that strike your fancy, you can write down. Maybe other values come to mind, such as fairness, fun, growth, happiness, maybe kindness, justice, knowledge, love, meaning, openness, optimism, recognition, peace, resilience, respect, responsibility, security, spirituality, success, trust, wisdom. So write down any values, either from that list or otherwise, your eyes half closed. Maybe many values or just one. The values that make persevering through this challenge worth it to me. And as you walk along that river, you can imagine wonderful, strong trees growing alongside the river. And each tree represents one of these values. You can give it a hug or stand underneath the shade. Soak in the energy of these values. Know that they're always growing, branching out, rooting down within you. And in your journal, you can doodle or draw out the words of these values that are important to you. And later on, you can find some way of visualizing or representing these values, something that you might want to keep nearby, put on the refrigerator, on your bathroom mirror, in your journal. Helps you connect with and stick with these values in the days and weeks to come. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes and be right here and now. All right.
Oof.
Oof.
Oh, man, that was interesting. I came to an unexpected place in like the current challenge that I'm going through, where I was like, wow, what I'm really anticipating on the other side or holding a value is not at all what I thought.
Yeah. Whoa,
it was
cool.
Like, I just kept seeing the words, the mystery. Whoa. It's about the mystery. Yeah. I feel like I'm like,
that's exciting.
I'm having some like Piscean times over here. Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. Like, that's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. It's like an end of the line. It feels very like introductory to the final arc of the final wheel of the year. Capricorn, Aquarius, Pisces. Yeah. That was super cool.
Cool.
Well, awesome. Listeners, semi-sextiles, support, interconnectedness of being, grit, adaptation, and mushrooms for all. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. And we look forward to connecting with you soon.